This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Your number is 877-217-5757. Send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow is producing. And in short order, we are slated to be joined by one Bruce Eugene Westerman. He is the congressman from the 4th District from the great state of Arkansas. And if you go north of Baton Rouge to the Louisiana line, about 90% of that line is represented by this congressman, Bruce Westerman, who previously served as a member of the Arkansas House of Representatives. He was the majority leader in the House, and in 2014, he was elected to Congress. This is his fifth term that has begun. He's chair of the Natural Resources Committee, and Bruce Westerman was the person who put Kevin McCarthy's name into nomination on the 15th ballot, the one that got the man from Bakersfield elected Speaker of the House. Good morning, Congressman Westerman.
Good morning, Jim. Great to be with you. I appreciate you having me on your show. I've heard a lot about it.
Well,
you're quite the celebrity in Louisiana.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm honored to have you, and you're from one of my favorite cities on the planet. I logged 10 years of my youth in North Little Rock, and I used to travel frequently, and as much as I can these days, when I go to Little Rock, I go to Hot Springs. That is a fabulous place, kind of a hidden jewel, Congressman, and it's your hometown.
It is. I was born there, raised there, and after going off to college, I was fortunate to go back and live there and raise my four kids in Hot Springs. But, you know, I want to invite everybody from Louisiana and all your listening area to come experience Arkansas and the natural state and the beautiful city of Hot Springs. Lots of stuff to do there.
Well, I don't know of a more beautiful city in the country as far as scenic beauty, and it has a past, as we know. People like Al Capone used to roam the streets of Hot Springs, didn't they?
They did. And a little known fact about Hot Springs is Major League Baseball training actually started in Hot Springs, and all 16 of the original Major League Baseball teams at one time spent time in Hot Springs. I think the number right now is 60% of the Major League Hall of Famers at one point in time did spring training in Hot Springs.
In Babe Ruth?
Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, a bunch of them.
Well, it is a town that has great appeal, and I would encourage anybody, it's not too far from us, to go there if you can. And the congressman also played football at the University of Arkansas for Ken Hatfield. And you know what? It's kind of like in Louisiana. If you played football at LSU, you got a head start on anybody you're running against. I would suspect that helped you in your political endeavors.
Well, I don't know if it plays the right word, Jim. I was on the team for 4 years, and you know, love putting that Razorback uniform on and running through the A. You know, what a life experience that is. And like you said, I'm sure it's the same way in Louisiana. If you grow up as a young man in Arkansas and you dream about being able to be on the Razorback football team, and, you know, just talking about it still kind of gives me chills to think about that experience that I had. And, you know, I remember, I think it was my sophomore year, we got this young graduate assistant coach in from Louisiana, and nobody could understand anything he said, but he was big and burly, and we just kind of knew we were supposed to work harder when he was around. His name was Ed Orgeron. So
that was in the late 80s. Isn't that something? Well, you know, those were good years for the University of Arkansas, and I remember the story that our friend Neil Gladner tells is that a couple of years, you won 10 games when you were playing, and in one of those seasons, Ken Hatfield was a coach, and he goes to the podium, and he's looking at the athletic director, Frank Broyles, who had just waxed eloquently about what a fabulous season it was. And he says, "Coach Broyles, would you say those things about me if we were 2-10 rather than 10-2? And he goes, "Yeah." He says, "Coach Hatfield, we love you." He says, "If you went 2-10, we'd still love you. We'd miss you, but we'd love you."
Yeah. Yeah. And that was back when the coaching carousel didn't revolve near as much as it it does today. But I mean, Coach Hatfield's a great man, and I was just blessed to play for him. Yeah, if one of the assistant coaches cursed in practice, Coach Hatfield would stop and say, "No, we don't talk that way around these young men." And that is very rare in college athletics today. But he's a genuine good guy.
He's a good coach. Remember him at the Air Force Academy. Now, how much contact? I mentioned in our open, and you may have actually heard it as we were getting you on the line, about how you represent 90% of the border between Arkansas and Louisiana. How much contact do you have with our delegation? Do you rub shoulders with Mike Johnson and Julia Letlow and Clay Higgins and Garrett Graves and Steve Scalise? Do you converse with them regularly?
Yeah. I tell you, Louisiana has a tremendous delegation, and you know, I share the border with Mike Johnson and Julia Letlow, and you know what quality individuals they are. I worked with Mike. He was trying to do a bill on the wildlife refuge there around Shreveport, and we were able to get that done last year. And Julia is just a rising star, and as you know, D.C. Mardi Gras week, and she was the one that got designated to lead D.C. Mardi Gras, so she has worked double overtime this week with all the events that are taking place up here.
Do you pop in there as well?
Yeah, I went by yesterday and said hi to folks. I've got beads and all that they're giving away, but it's quite a deal. I mean, it speaks a lot to Louisiana and the pride of the state, and it's unbelievable how many people come to D.C. for D.C. Mardi Gras, and I know that's just that's minor compared to the Mardi Gras celebrations that take place, next month.
Now, I mentioned you put Kevin McCarthy's name into nomination on the 15th ballot, which was the one of the most eventful nights in U.S. House history, and he finally got through with 212 votes, not a majority, but a plurality, and it was Bruce Westerman who put his name into nomination. You must like Congressman McCarthy. Why?
Yeah, he's been a friend of mine ever since I ran for Congress, and I've gotten to know him better up here, and I think he's going to make a phenomenal speaker. I was working a lot with Garrett Graves. Garrett and I are both on the same committees, and we were really trying to help Speaker McCarthy get through that first week and help round up votes to get him over the top. And I was actually scheduled to give the 14th nomination, which we thought that was going to be the one that put him over. And I think there were some wires that got crossed, and Patrick McHenry from North Carolina thought he was supposed to do the 14th. So I said, "That's fine, Patrick, you do it, and we got to get this over with." And one thing talking about Coach Hatfield, he always said, "There's no such thing as luck; it's where preparation meets opportunity." But what an opportunity I had there to do mm-hmm. the 15th and final nomination. And even with all the pressure and everything that was going on, Kevin and I being friends, he said, "Westerman, there's millions of people watching. We got the votes. Don't screw this up." So, then his staff was saying, "Don't drag this out." And I of course, had prepared remarks for the 14th nomination, and I thought, I'm just going to scrap all of that, and I probably gave the shortest nomination speech in history that basically said, "America, the world's watching, America's watching. What America needs and what this body needs is a lot less talk and a lot more action. I nominate Kevin McCarthy for the Republican nominee of the Speaker of the House." And he said, "Best speech ever," especially after it worked.
All right. Well, Bruce Westerman is the guest, the congressman from Hot Springs, Arkansas, representing the 4th District, Republican, and supporter of the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Now, many thought you might run for governor. You were the majority leader of the Arkansas House. You've been in Congress now. This is your 5th term, but you had an opportunity last year, and you didn't run, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders won. Your thoughts about why you passed up an opportunity to perhaps be governor of your state, and what about the new governor?
Well, I'm honored that people would think I was going to run for governor, but my focus has been on Congress. I think I've got a lot of work to do here. And, I mean, what a team we have back in Arkansas. We had Tim Griffin, who was our lieutenant governor, Leslie Rutledge, who was our attorney general, who are both interested in governor. And then Sarah Sanders comes along, and she kind of cleared the field and won overwhelmingly. And, you know, I know her dad, know her, and I'm just really excited about what's going to happen in Arkansas with her at the helm. And, you know, Jim, I came from a time when I became majority leader in the Arkansas legislature. It was the first Republican majority leader in 138 years.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll continue there. Obviously, it's been a Republican wave in Arkansas as it has been in Louisiana. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, another segment with Congressman Bruce Westerman, Republican from Hot Springs, Arkansas. In the Deep South right now, the SEC states are largely congregated by Republicans in high office, and Louisiana is reflective of that. Both U.S. Senators Republican, 5 of 6 House members Republican. Arkansas, all 4 House members Republican, and a Republican governor in Sarah Huckabee Sanders. So, and 2 Republican U.S. Senators, John Boozman and Tom Cotton. And Bruce Westerman was commenting that when he became the majority leader of the Arkansas House, when he was in the state legislature, he became the first Republican in a century to do that. What do you attribute the wave, the sea change we've had, particularly in these 11 SEC states from blue to red? What precipitated that, Congressman Westerman?
Jim, I think it goes back to something Reagan said. And, you know, Reagan was a Democrat, and he said he didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left him. And I think people across the South realized that the Democrat Party of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Barack Obama was not the Democrat Party that they signed up for. And, you know, Arkansas was really the last state in the South to flip from blue to red. And we think that was probably a holdover from the Clinton effect. But in 2008, Arkansas was still almost as blue as it is red today. But I ran for the legislature in 2010. We flipped the majority in 2012. And right now, it's every statewide elected official is Republican. Every member of Congress and the Senate is Republican, as you said. We have super majorities in the state House and the state Senate. And you're seeing the local offices just flip from Democrat to Republican all over the state. And when it flipped, it flipped hard. I was amused on election night this year. You know, they started reporting results from Florida, and Florida Republicans had a really good night. And one of the Fox News commentators said, you know, Florida is starting to look more like Arkansas.
Well,
it's amazing how quickly we
flipped. And it's happened, as you know, in a decade and a half. But did you like President Clinton?
You know, it's hard not to like him when you get to know him. He's one of the most personable people you'll ever meet. But his politics and my politics are very much opposite. Of course, I don't think he could get elected. Maybe he could get elected as a Democrat now, but he's
in Arkansas. You mean
possibly?
Well, he'd be the only Democrat who could win in Arkansas. We know that statewide, and he might not win. You're right; he might not win there.
That would be questionable. And you know, my first opponent was a good guy. It was James Lee Witt, who was Clinton's FEMA director, and I had President Clinton in my district campaigning for James Lee Witt several times. And, you know, President moved out of the state, lives in New York, and I think he kind of lost touch with his roots and didn't really understand what was happening in Arkansas. But, you know, we're having the big debate over Obamacare, and President Clinton put some tweet out about James Lee's opponent wants to take away Obamacare, and we were retweeting him saying, hometown roots, tell it like it is, Mr. Mm-hmm. President.
Well, your governor, Asa Hutchinson, a Republican, the previous governor, he took Obamacare. One of the few Republicans, I think the only Republican in the South to do so, and got some heat for it. But nationally, of course, he's become very popular in some circles, and some are even talking about him running for president of the United States. But what about taking the Affordable Care money that is available, 90% of it paid by the federal government? Was that a good move by Governor Hutchinson?
He actually didn't do that. That was the Democrat governor.
But he kept it.
He inherited it.
He could have stopped it.
Yeah, and it's something I really pushed back on when I was in the legislature. It's the Medicare expansion part of it, which Arkansas supposedly has this hybrid model. But at the end of the day, it's a lot of so-called free money from D.C. that has to be matched by 10% from the state. And the single largest expenditure in the state of Arkansas is the Medicaid budget because of the adoption of Obamacare there by the state. We see that differently, but he got elected governor and I'm in Congress. So we're still friends and wishing the best, but we don't see eye to eye on that one.
I mentioned you're chair of the Natural Resources Committee, an important committee specifically for the state of Louisiana. What are your thoughts about climate change and its effect on the environment and on the coast of our state?
Yeah, and I want to point out what a great member Garrett Graves is on the committee and the leadership that he's taken. And his passion for the coastline of Louisiana and Louisiana getting its fair share of those dollars for conservation that are being generated mostly by offshore energy in Louisiana. So Garrett and I work very closely. We want to be good conservationists. The word conservation is derived from conservative, and we believe that we should be good stewards, but we're also realistic and know that the vast majority of the world's energy comes from fossil fuels right now, and you can't just flip a switch like this administration is trying to do and shut down all fossil fuels overnight and expect to have any kind of quality of life like we experience now. And on top of that, developing countries, they don't care about carbon in the atmosphere. What they want is reliable and affordable energy. That's why you're seeing China build a coal plant a week, and you're seeing more and more energy development. It's on an exponential growth rate. So I think Garrett and I have very common interest here that our goal should be to be the innovators to make energy not only reliable and affordable, but also clean. And then, Steve Scalise is such a huge advocate for domestic energy and the security side of that. So I work a lot on natural resource issues, particularly energy issues, with the Louisiana delegation, and y'all have some great representatives down there.
Now, on the debt ceiling, that was a big issue when Speaker McCarthy was elected, and there's obviously a crew of Republicans in the House that wants to fight any increase in the debt ceiling, something that's been done over several administrations, both Republican and Democratic. Bill Clinton is the last president to leave office with a surplus, and that was a long time ago. That was 2001. Are you in accord that we shouldn't raise the debt ceiling anymore?
Well, I think we have to raise the debt ceiling at the end of the day, but we have to change our course of action. And this debate about the debt ceiling, I think, can be a great opportunity to put some provisions in place so that we can address the debt and not keep spending like drunken sailors as we go forward. The debt limit is very important to the financial well-being of our country, and Janet Yellen has already said she can do extraordinary measures until June 1st. Whether she's accurate on that or not, that's the number everybody's going to be looking at or the date everybody's going to look at. So what I've expressed in our conference and where I think we need to go is we need to figure out what it is we want in exchange for raising the debt limit. Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer have said it's non-negotiable. It's got to be a clean increase in the debt limit. So that's not right for them not to even acknowledge that there's a problem with spending. And I think the best idea I've seen so far is to attach a piece of legislation to the debt limit increase that says that when we get into a government shutdown, that there's priorities on the bills that get paid. And the first one would be interest on the debt. Then it would be paying our men and women in uniform, keeping the air traffic controllers on the job, those things that are critical to keeping our country going. And I think that's a good thing to make contingent on the debt ceiling.
Congressman, we do have to roll, and I know you're a busy man, but we thank you for your time, and we look forward to a future visit with you. Good luck. Congressman Bruce Westerman, Republican from Hot Springs, graduate of Arkansas and Yale. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Your numbers 877-217-5757. Lieutenant Governor Billy Dungesser is with us, and Billy was in Louisiana yesterday, but I think, are you in Washington today, Governor?
I am, my friend.
So you were reveling with the partygoers at Washington Mardi Gras, I guess.
I sure am. I'll be coming home tomorrow morning to take part in festivities and parades and things in Louisiana, but I'll be here the rest of the day and tonight.
Well, you do parties well. And we thought, many of us did, there would be a big bonanza with you announcing your candidacy for governor. And I presume you're going to be running for re-election. And you had to give it a lot of thought. Last time we talked, you were still weighing the pros and cons and ultimately decided not to pull the trigger. Why not?
A lot of praying, a lot of soul searching. It was actually a lot tougher decision than I thought it would be. The poll numbers look great, but I love what I do. 250,000 families rely on the tourism industry for their livelihood. And as we climb back to those record-breaking numbers we enjoyed before COVID, in a good year, we see many mom-and-pop businesses fail. And we've got to really concentrate on getting back to those record numbers over the next couple of years. A lot of these small businesses depleted their savings during COVID aren't going to make it. So I really love what I do. I love this state and love the people, and I do have the best job in the world. And having a lot of Republicans in the middle of that field, I think you're going to see what happened in the last race or the last couple. David Vitter, you saw Scott Angel and Jay Darden get middled out, and you get the extreme right and the left and a Democrat, if there's one Democrat in the runoff. And so knowing the nasty negative campaign that would probably be ahead, I thought it was best for me to stay here and continue to promote the great state of Louisiana, if the state will have me for another 4 years.
Well, you will be formidable, and the election is pretty close. It's actually 37 weeks from tomorrow, October 14th. We're 8.5 months from the finish line, and Jeff Landry's been running for quite a while and raising money, and the differences you have with him are well known. But right now, Billy Nungesser, the race is evolving very well for him. What do you think about the prospect of Governor Landry?
Well, I believe that we've got to elect somebody that brings this state together and works with everybody and does it from a way of bringing people together and compromise. The negative nastiness of politics has divided us for too long. And I'm hoping somewhere in this candidate field, somebody can emerge that really has the greater good of Louisiana, all of Louisiana, to work across the aisle, with everybody in every corner of the state to do the best they can. And obviously I'll work with whoever's elected and do the best I can to work with them, as I did with this governor. Because once we're elected, we represent all the people, not just the people that voted for us.
Well, based on what you said, you are of the mind that it likely will be a runoff between the Republican survivor among many candidates and a Democrat. Now, if that's the case, right now four Republicans have announced: Landry, Schroeder, Hewitt, and Richard Nelson, and perhaps Garrett Graves, although that's looking more and more doubtful. What do you make of the four Republicans who are in the field right now?
Well, I think if coming closer to qualifying, if you end up with one, let's say, moderate Republican, Jeff Landry, and a Democrat, there is a road for that moderate in the middle. Matter of fact, I had met with all three of the candidates, the other candidates that are running, to make sure they were staying in the race, and at this time they all have committed to stay in the race. But I think as it gets closer, some of the candidates that, and I don't want to speak for them, but if they don't catch on, raise the money, and move up in the polls, I'd hope that you'll see some of those candidates not move forward and qualify, and give somebody in the middle a chance of making the runoff.
But a Democrat makes it somewhat problematic for a moderate Republican, and you mentioned the scenario we had in 2015. People forget that Vitter and Angell and Darden were blanketed together fairly closely in that race. Edwards got 40% in the primary. Vitter got 23, Angell got 20, and Darden got 15. And Darden got 15, spending about one quarter of the amount of money that Vitter did. And Vitter ended up getting enough to make the cut and then lost resoundingly. He only received 44% of the votes. Jeff Landry is viewed by some as a Vitter-esque candidate, but I think people might be underestimating him. He doesn't have the scandal plague past that Vitter had. But he's been nicked up. Is he nicked up enough that he's unelectable in your estimation?
Well, I think we'll find that out. I was honored in the poll numbers I saw to have a high approval rating. It's a very thin line because of his high negative. Look, if Scott Angell or Jay Darden would have got out that race, the other one would be governor today. And I think nobody argues that. So, in hindsight, if some of the Republicans running come together and say, and listen, right now there's a lot of names of Democrats being thrown around. You may end up with one, two, or three Democrats in the race. And if that happens, then it's wide open for any of them to make the runoff with Jeff, who has the far-right support. And a chunk of that vote. So it's going to be an interesting race for sure. I'm going to focus on my race and work hard to let the people know what we've done is bringing tourism back and focus on getting reelected.
Now, a few days ago on this show in this studio was one Gordon McKernan, the advertising lawyer who, by his own acknowledgement, is investing $20 million on advertising this year. He is meeting none other than with James Carville today at Washington Mardi Gras to discuss a possibility of running for governor. I don't think Gordon McKernan is going to do it because Billy probably doesn't want to make $135,000 a year. But can you imagine if that guy got in the race? And he's a Republican. He would. You talk about universal name recognition. He would have it.
He's everywhere. And I tell you, his firm. When we were over many weeks feeding the people in Lake Charles every weekend, we were down there feeding the volunteers and all. His firm, as many firms were, had a whole group of their employees out there feeding people, and a lot of times they don't get enough credit for those kind of things. And so I got to meet his daughter and all the people that work at that firm, and they truly cared about helping those people in South Louisiana. But you're right. Money is the thing. Had I announced governor, I'd have started seeing attack ads on me the next day. And it would take about $8 million to start defending myself immediately through the election. And Someone like that surely has a deep enough pockets to get known, mm-hmm. to get his issues out there, and to defend himself against attacks that may not be true. So we saw that where Eddie Rasponi attacked Ralph Abraham. Ralph didn't quite have the deep enough pockets, and subsequently Ralph did make the runoff. And, you know, that's one thing I wish the Republicans would do. When you lie about your opponent, you lie about me and my family, I'm not voting for you. I don't want a liar. But we've let these people lie about their opponents, get in the runoff, and they alienate the other Republican supporters. A lot of the people that back Ralph Abraham were not going out and vote, a lot of them, for Eddie Rasponi because he lied about their candidate. You can't do that. I won't lie to get elected. I don't need the job that bad, and I'd be worried after the election and said, Billy, you lied to me. But some of these people, there's nothing they won't say or do to get elected. And I wish we could pass a law. If you lie about me and the judge says it's a lie, you owe me twice what you spent on that ad. That would surely pull it back a little bit because it turns people off from voting.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Billy Nungesser, now running for re-election. It would be his third term, and last time around he received more votes than any other statewide official, and we have two of them who are in the race for governor now, in Treasurer John Schroeder and Attorney General Jeff Landry. And the Lieutenant Governor has brought some swag bags with him, a beautiful bag, by the way, Louisiana Feed Your Soul. The bag itself is quite an attraction, but inside all kinds of goodies. It's too numerous to even mention. A pen, a cup, a shirt, beautiful purple shirt, Louisiana Feed Your Soul, and a Mardi Gras guide. The Mardi Gras guide from Arthur Hardy. It's all here. If you can answer the trivia question from Robin Dow, and this is a good one. You got to get it right, though. The candidate for governor who received the most votes in a losing effort, who is it in Louisiana? The Louisiana gubernatorial candidate who received the most votes ever in a losing effort. 877-217-5757. If you get it right, you'll get the beautiful swag bag from Governor Billy Nungesser, who is touting tourism. He does it well. And last time you were with us, you were just back from Pasadena. I'm sure you're still savoring the moment. That was quite a trip.
It really was. You know, I hope everyone was as proud of those 22 queens, fairs and festival queens. And they were up at 3 o'clock every morning and talking about their town, their city, the boudin, the strawberries, just incredible representation. And they gave interviews all over the country.
We'll be back for another quarter hour with Governor Nungesser after this quick timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Governor Billy Nungesser. Gretchen in St. Francisville, you're on the air with Governor Nungesser. Hello, Gretchen.
Hello. Thank you so much for having Mr. Nungesser. I'm a Democrat, but this talk of the governorship, the Richard Nelson that you had on the show was so impressive. And I just want to know why we're not hearing more about Richard Nelson.
All right. This state representative from Mandeville, who's a real go-getter. I think he's got a great future in Louisiana politics, but he's going for the gold, and he's doing it on a shoestring budget, and he'll have to get some momentum. But Billy Nungesser, he's an impressive guy.
He really is. I had lunch with him a few weeks before I made the decision. He's all in. He's brilliantly smart and passionate about Louisiana. And I agree with you, Jim. He's got a bright future in Louisiana, and he really does care. And going around the state and being he surely will energize some of the younger voters. So he's somebody to watch.
Mike in Villa Del Rey, you're on with Governor Nungesser. Hello, Mike. Good morning, sir. Okay, let's put Mike on hold, see if we can get him back. Let's go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Billy Nungesser. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. Yes, Mr. Nungesser. What's your position on banning assault weapons? There are military weapons that our citizens don't have any right to own.
All right, what about banning assault weapons? Is that something that flies in the great state of Louisiana, Billy Nungesser?
Yeah, I don't think you ever passed that in Louisiana. I'll tell you this. There's been some talk about requiring additional checks or whatever for the assault routes for the people that use those for hunting or sports shooting. And so you can't just walk in and purchase one. And I think that conversation has a lot better chance of passing legislation in Louisiana than an all-out ban. And I think that's worth discussing. But I don't think you'll see a ban, and I don't think we should be legislation to ban any firearms. But surely some of those guns that are where a young kid can just walk in and buy one, that there's been a lot of conversation around that.
All right, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Mike, let's try you again. Mike in Villa Del Rey, I think we have you now. You're on, sir.
Yes. I'm going to take a shot at the swag bag for my daughter.
All right, okay.
I would go with, I'm tossed up between Duke or Lewis Lambert. I'm going with Lewis Lambert.
Lewis Lambert's a good guess. In 1979, he received 681,134 votes. That same election, David Treen, 690,691. And they rank among Louisiana vote getters for governor 10th and 11th overall. But there are, well, let's see, there's one more guy who got more votes in a losing cause than did Lewis Lambert, but a very good guess. At that time, by the way, that was the most expensive governor's election in American history. And, you know, they spent about $10 million. Well, Governor Edwards told yours truly, and I think he's told many others, that his campaign through national and local sources and two elections for primary and runoff against Rasponi, he spent $50 million. $50 million. And he said, and I was not outspent. So that was a $100 million race, Billy Nungesser. This is big business in our state.
It really is. I would have guessed Lewis Lambert as well. I was involved heavily with my father in that campaign, and you saw a shift from Lewis Lambert going from a conservative to a liberal to get in the runoff, and then you saw all the Democrats support the Republican Dave Treen in the runoff, which you know, I don't think you'd see that today, but that was a pretty incredible campaign.
877-217-5757 for Billy Nungesser. And Bill Huey sent a couple of emails, and I'm getting some others, too, related to the tragedy involving the LSU student from Covington, the young woman who died after being raped and then basically left her own devices as she was four times above the legal limit for alcohol intoxication. And I don't even want to use the lady's name because she was a victim, and this, I think, is unfair to her family to have her name mentioned continuously. It's terribly unfortunate. But Huey and I see John in New Road, several others have said this can't be good for tourism, can't be good for LSU and Baton Rouge, now getting a lot of the same kind of grief, maybe justifiably so, that New Orleans is. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and our prayers continue to go out for the family. That is just a horrible, horrible tragedy. You know, one thing I'd like the press to start doing, when these people are arrested, how many times have they been arrested for a violent crime and they're not in jail? You know, the commander of the 8th District in New Orleans, who recently took a job in Alaska, we were working on him on a plan to save the French Quarter, told me he arrested a 17-year-old 61 times. And until he beat a lady within an inch of her life with a gun, he never spent any time in jail. 61 times. Now, I talked to police officers in the French Quarter that arrest a guy with a gun selling dope, and 3 days later, they arrest the same guy. They get tired of arresting the same people over and over. And we ought to put the judge that let these people out in the paper. But if someone's killed, and that person has been arrested for a violent crime many times, we ought to know why that judge is letting them out. And we've got to start addressing that problem and maybe change some laws where people have to spend, if you're an habitual, you've got to spend some time behind bars. I believe in rehabilitation, but I believe in locking you up until you are rehabilitated. and not putting the public at risk. And that's what's happening.
Well, another listener asked about whether public officials, you included, now universally have protection, as in people guarding you. I recall lieutenant governors like Paul Hardy, who just walked the streets and nobody bothered him. My friend Lester Douay played football at LSU, used to guard Bobby Freeman, who was a former boxer, and I think they felt comfortable that no one was going to attack them. But what about now? Do you have to have somebody at your side because of the potential danger?
Well, you know, obviously the governor allows me people from his security detail. I don't travel with them out of town. I'm very screwed with the state money. I don't think it's necessary. I did take a trooper to the Rose Parade because of the crowds and everything else at that event. But I have a trooper drive me to and from events. I drive myself a lot of times on the weekends or if I'm close to home. So I do not have them full time. And obviously when I'm in the parades and different things like that, I do have a trooper with me as well.
Gustavo in Goodwood. Hello, Gustavo. You're on with Lieutenant Governor Nungesser.
I forgot what I called about, because with this liberal mayor that we have, you know, everybody goes to jail for a couple of hours and then they're out and no cash bail.
Well, that's not the mayor's fault, by the way. That she doesn't set bail, but go ahead, Gustavo, please, sir. I know you're concerned.
What I don't understand, and y'all are super, super smart, why would anybody spend $50 million for a job that pays what?
$135,000 a year, but you get perks, and you know some people, believe it or not, are altruistic. I think Governor Edwards is in it for the right reasons. He may not be doing the job some people want, but I don't think he's there totally to be a famous person, or he's certainly not doing it for the wealth. He's doing it because he has this call to public service, and as corny as that sounds, Governor Nungesser, I think some people do it for reasons way beyond what the job pays.
Absolutely. You know, some people have an ego to be in the public office. Some people really care. You know, I was retired, had a riding center for special needs children, rode out Katrina to protect those horses and animals, ended up rescuing people that lived with me for months. I didn't know. I got angry because I didn't see any elected official helping Plaquemines Parish. And then after the BP oil spill, I didn't feel like enough people stood up for the state of Louisiana when they were doing bad things along the coast and ran for lieutenant governor. So I did it because I felt we needed more vocal people speaking the honest truth about everything, even when it's painful and even when it's not popular. And so although I have the best job in promoting all the good of Louisiana, I do get involved in just about any issue where I think the public officials are not doing the right thing and try to let the public know all the facts about it.
Lastly, what about the Grammys?
Man, incredible, huh? Louisiana hits above their weight, more Grammy nominees than any state per capita. Once again, we're going to steal the show, and we're just so blessed to have so much talent. 30 nominees, more than ever. The most ever, really. And I tell people there's something in the soil or in the crawfish bowl that grows so much talent, because we surely get our fair share of talent here in Louisiana.
That we do. 1.4% of the national population, but much more than 1.4% of the national talent in any number of endeavors, including music, which is one of our staples. And Holly in the Garden District has received the swag bag. Robin says she got it right. Off air, she answered. It was Eddie Risponi, 2019. He got 734,286 votes.
Wow.
He lost by 40,000 votes to John Bell Edwards, but the most by a losing candidate ever. Thanks, Governor. Appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great day.
You too. Signature support for First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Stay safe. Stay tuned.